the best way I heard it explained to me was when you're behind, you open source. When you're ahead, you're closed. And if you look at, say, Windows, they had a monopoly on the desktop, closed. They don't need to be open source. But then you look at Google, very far behind, they have a monopoly on search. So when they talk about search, their algorithm for search is closed. You can't understand how pages are ranked. But then you look at Android, they went open because they were so far behind iOS and stuff like that. So they went open source and they wanted to be on everybody's phone. So I think Facebook going is closed when it comes to their graphs and everything, right? Facebook, Instagram,
they all used, to be open when all the companies like were created, you know, like Zynga and all. And then they closed the graph up, you know, at some point.
When they had a lead and nobody can compete with them, which is exactly what OpenAI did. They became closed AI. So fascinating.
This Week in Startups is brought to you by Finn Can't Burn Its Mouth on Hot Pizza or Wave at Someone Who Wasn't Waving at Them. Finn can resolve half of your customer support tickets instantly before they reach your team. Meet Finn, a breakthrough AI bot by Intercom, ready to join your support team today. Visit intercom.com/Finn. 8 Sleep. Good sleep is the ultimate game changer. Now you can add the pod cover to any mattress. Go to 8sleep.com/twist to check out the pod cover and get $150 off at checkout. And Carta now lets you launch and administer SPVs for your syndicate. Share your knowledge, capital, and network to launch your syndicate SPVs through Carta. Get 10% off your first SPV with promo code TWIST.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of This Week in Startups, and Sunny Madra is here. My guy, Sandeep Madra from Definitive Intelligence. If you don't know what that is, I placed a little bet on that company. Like I was able to get a little tiny sliver of Sunny's cap table, serial entrepreneur, and one of the smartest, most fun guys I know. Welcome back to the program, Sunny.
Good to be back. Very excited.
All right.
Missed you guys last week.
I know. And I wasn't on All In, and these guys did a rogue podcast without me. I go on vacation. Crazy. These guys are out of their minds. But it was pretty good.
Did Friedberg really do it in iMovie?
I think he was joking to an iMovie, but he did edit it himself. I mean, that's why it's like a little bit janky, but I mean, if you record a Zoom podcast and people have good microphones, you know, it takes a bit of, the visuals weren't edited. So you get that 4x4 frame, which I hate.
Yeah.
It's like a bad experience to watch people drinking coffee or like checking their email or, you know, pulling up the next topic. It's much better when it's a single or you sometimes go to it. But yeah, I mean, I was impressed. It, having hundreds and thousands of edits from Sachs and everything, like these guys really edit the pod. So, to make themselves like they like focus on every little sentence and edit it in post like lunatics. I'm just like, whatever I said, but these guys are like super precious and have their marketing and comms people like review everything for compliance, which I understand. Like if you have funds, you have to be careful, but we all agreed to be off. And then they're like at the last minute, and I gave everybody, producer Nick, and I tried to shut my company down that week. And I guess like I gave everybody the week off, you know, like they deserve to get a vacation day. But yeah, not a bad episode. But we should talk about, there was one thing on there about AI, which was the drop in AI usage, which I would have liked to comment on because I do think, you know, that whatever 10 or 20% drop is notable.
Mm-hmm.
In some ways and not notable in others. What's your take on that? I mean, obviously, kids out of school is...
I was going to go there.
So that's super interesting.
Yeah. So I think there's the kids out of school problem. And then I do think, you know, if we look back and it's kind of really timely, in the last 48 hours, OpenAI just released Code Interpreter, which, you know, we've demoed here early on because we had early access to it, but they just released that to everyone. And so I think there's a definitely, you know, part of this being impacted by where we are in the school cycle and obviously that's going to impact things. But I think more so, having Code Interpreter available to all paid users is going to create a massive uplift for them.
Yeah.
Because that's, you know, we've seen the functionality before. We don't have to demo it again, but it's really
explain
powerful.
To people who maybe are hearing about ChatGPT's Code Interpreter. What is that used for? Just one more time for the audience.
So the Code Interpreter allows you to give some data, usually in the form of a CSV file, into ChatGPT and then have ChatGPT help you with analyzing that data. And, you know, the example that we did was like some output of electric car registration data. And then we input it in, we asked some questions, we had some charts created. So it's a way of like having like your own personal data assistant around a smaller data set available to you.
And that is now available, Code Interpreter, to the people who are paying the $20 a month.
$20 a month, exactly.
How many people do you think are paying the $20 a month now? You think it's a million, 2 million?
Yeah, I would say my guess would be somewhere between 2 and 5 million.
If you think about that, it's going to blow past the New York Times, which is, I think, at 9.7 million last I checked. They might be, they're about to pass 10 million.
Yeah.
And that's not insignificant. If 10 million people, if 5 million, that's 100 million a month.
Yeah.
100 million a month, 1.2 billion a year in subscriptions. And subscriptions are generally 100% profitable, right?
Yep.
They do have some infrastructure costs, but I think they could become, if people are willing to keep paying the $20 a month, that'll be the real test.
Yeah.
I also, people don't understand that all web traffic, YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, everything goes down a certain percentage during the summer because people go on vacation, they go outside. So that's the obvious thing. I also think there are some people who, and I guess this is the more interesting topic, the press immediately went to, oh, it's waning.
Yeah.
People are less interested in it, which is such a stupid take. Because obviously when a new technology comes out, everybody tries it because there's no cost to trying it. But you find your natural audience for your podcast, for your software, whatever. So what are your thoughts on that angle that some of the press were like, oh, it's a fad, it's a fad, it's crypto?
Well, you know, it's definitely not, right? I mean, the use cases are there. You know, we've talked about this. The origins of this podcast was in crypto. And so, look, the other thing that it's hard to take into account until OpenAI starts publishing some type of data is many use cases have made their way into other products. So where you may not have to go to openai.com or chatgpt.openai, you may be using OpenAI indirectly, either through Notion or through any number of products that now offer integrated experience with their APIs, right? Mm-hmm. And their underlying LLMs. And so, I think it's like almost like, let's think about AWS, right? When, you know, AWS initial customer was primarily Amazon, but then as they made it available to others, you have to look at AWS as, you know, from a revenue perspective, not just as a, you know, sort of a end consumer site. So I do think, you know, these numbers and the way to look at it until we get some data or like maybe someone publishes something around their API, I don't think we have the full picture. So I think I think people are just jumping to a story, which is easier to do than saying, because my guess is their API usage through all the startups and enterprises that are out there is, you know, increasing week over week at a pretty significant clip.
Mm. That is, I think, where the rubber meets the road. When developers use an API, that means, yeah, in some cases, they are playing with it, but in majority of cases, I think there's some application that's going to hit consumers and they just don't see it. And so you do not judge Amazon Web Services or Azure or Google Cloud by the number of consumers talking about it. It's the number of developers talking about it. And that is.
Yeah. And then ultimately their revenues, you know, those things report now separately and we can see, you know, what kind of huge impact that they've had on the, you know, top and bottom line of those companies.
Well, I mean, the growth of cloud computing was spectacular up until 2022, when it still was spectacular, over 20% growth year over year. But it did slow a little bit, I think, because of belt tightening. People during a recession, a recessionary-ish kind of thing, were in a down market in tech depression.
Yeah. And you know what? It's like a good kind of tie into this topic. Like a lot of folks have been pushing to the cloud for years, right? And we've seen those phenomenal growth numbers. The one thing that I think companies struggle with as they were moving to the cloud was the benefits that the cloud provides. Because if you were a legacy business, right, and you were running either something on-prem or maybe in, you know, your own data centers, those things were probably really efficient, and moving to cloud doesn't immediately get you that efficiency. Where the efficiency starts to amplify now is when you want to start using like additional services, whether the services came from, you know, the cloud providers themselves or like third party services, which requires your data to be in the cloud.
Mm.
So I do think what we're going to see very shortly is a huge uplift in workloads in the cloud being driven by AI applications, because that's the place you have to drive it. And so I think that's something we'll see that will play out, I think, in the next, you know, 18 months.
Finn can't go through a goth phase or still be haunted by a bad haircut they had in middle school. Finn can resolve half your customer support tickets instantly before they reach your team. What is Finn? Finn is a breakthrough AI bot from Intercom, designed for customer support teams. It learns your entire knowledge database and has the ability to carry conversations, remember context and nuance, while slashing your resolution times and support volume. Meet Finn, a breakthrough AI bot by Intercom, ready to join your support team today. Visit intercom.com/Finn.
I mean, let's just get to demos. That's why everybody's here. We did a little couple of minute preamble. We got on the same page here. But I love the fact that you're obsessed with this like I am. I have been doing a couple of projects myself over at inside.com. I won't talk about them yet. But one of the things I was doing, I want to get some advice on, is how to tag things by category. You may have seen, I'm trying to have, instead of human editors, tag the stories. I was trying to see if I could get ChatGPT-4 to tag the stories correctly.
Yes.
And I need to get a prompt that really does a good job on that. So I'll talk to you about that offline, or if anybody listening.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find like a database of like the most important topics in the world that like somebody has come to the conclusion that these are like the actual topics. So Google has one, it seems, for advertising, because
The 2,700 verticals that kind of represent almost all kind of topics.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out where to get that list from exactly, and if Google lets you use it.
I can send you a link. Yeah, no, they publish it. I'll send it to you.
They publish it because they want people to be able to download it and incorporate it into their websites,
I'll send you the link.
Okay, first demo is coming up. Of course, we'll sports guest us. If you're listening and not watching, well, go to YouTube and type in This Week in Startups and go find the channel, subscribe to the channel, put the alert on, because I'm going to be doing some breaking news alerts over the summer from time to time, but go ahead and check that out. Okay.
All right. So this is a fun one and actually quite useful. I'll speak to this. Like, you know, when I was earlier in my career and I needed help in some kind of creating a basic framework, you know, I don't have an MBA. When you're trying to, you know, basically understand other aspects of the business other than technical, you want to have some framework. So this Venturis AI, you come to their website and basically you can give it a topic and it will come up with either an advanced or simple. The free ones are the simple thing, and it'll do a business analysis. And so, you know, there's a great movie from the 80s called Brewster's Millions. And I don't know if you remember in Brewster's Millions, one of the ideas that Richard Pryor's character is pitched on is a guy wanting to sell ice that's breaking off of icebergs. It's
artisanal ice.
Yes.
Yes. Your artisanal glacier ice. I'm crazy, but I think I literally heard a pitch on people who wanted to get artisanal glacier ice to put in fancy cocktails. I don't know if that was real or I imagined it or it was from Brewster's Millions, but okay.
Yeah. And so basically here is it, you know, generated by me.
So what's this website before called?
Venturis, V-E-N-T-U-R-U-S AI. Venturis AI.
Terrible name. Okay.
Okay. I kind of liked it, but
Venturis? I like adventurous, but Venturis. Yeah. Okay, I get it.
Or maybe like a venture, you know, as well.
Okay. So you put your startup idea in.
I want to start a company that sells ice that breaks off icebergs. Very simple prompt. And it basically turned that into a business analysis and feedback. So it gave me a brief description. It basically, you know, did that on its own. Then it did a SWOT analysis for me.
Oh, wow.
It subsequently did a PESTEL analysis, right? Which is, you know, political, economic, sociological, technological, environmental, legal, right? The target audience and user stories. You know, business strategies, business frameworks, and, you know, I won't read off all things here, but it basically gives you a solid framework for a business. And in many ways, J.Cal, you know, you guys do this at Inside, right? When folks, or launch, I would say, right? At launch, when folks show up with something. Yeah. I thought they did an incredible job. And this was the free version. They
Porter's have a- Five Forces Analysis. This is what's really interesting about this is they went into subcategories or other people's frameworks for analyzing a business. One of those is Porter's Five Forces Analysis. I've heard of that before. I've never actually used it. But can you maybe read some of those?
Yeah, sure. So that's like number 13 here. It's like, so threats of new entrants, moderate as barriers to entry include sourcing ice from iceberg, established partnerships and brand reputation, you know, bargaining power of suppliers, right? Like, do you have some kind of edge there with the suppliers, right? Bargaining power of the buyers, like who's going to buy this? You know, threat of substitutes. How easy will this be for someone to choose another party that's doing it? Intensity of competitive rivalry. Like how quickly will someone-
What does it say about this threat of substitute products, i.e. the ice machine in your refrigerator that's already there and you've already paid for it? No, the five forces, so people know. I'm just reading from Investopedia here. Competition in the industry.
Yeah.
Potential of new entrants into the industry. So the first two are about competition. The power of suppliers, the power of customers. In other words, how much power do they have over you as the provider of these, and then threat of substitute products. So a substitute product would be slightly different. It would be something to cool drinks, right? As opposed to ice itself. That would be a direct competitor, right?
Yes, correct.
That's super fascinating. So essentially what this is doing is they have a series of prompts they run your idea through, is what I'm guessing, right? Is that what this is?
My guess is like sort of the rough structure behind this is, yeah, they take a prompt and what they do behind the scenes is they have a set of, you know, prompt templates that walk your idea through each of these. And they have 14 sections here. And so they take the idea and then they work with an LLM to create a brief description. And then each of those 13 sections, which I think is really powerful. Right. Like I
think this is great. I mean, this is like, this would be a whole semester at a business school. You would work on something like this.
Yeah.
And now you can basically do an approximation of it. Who knows if it's actually of the quality of what you would get in a course, right? To, you know, do your first mock-up of a business.
Yeah.
But it would literally whip you through multiple of these. So I just did one.
Yeah.
And I said,
oh, yeah. Pull it up. Let's see yours.
Yeah. Let's see what mine does. Because this is actually something I'm thinking about doing. So I'll make a little bit of an announcement here. Venture Capitalist Training School. Comprehensive analysis and feedback. So, you know, I have Angel University where I teach people to be angels and we've donated $200,000 to charity. I've taught it 35 times, I think. And we've basically got maybe, I think 4,000 or 5,000 people have taken the course now. And so we've created a lot of angel investors in the world. But my idea is now that I'm going to have my venture studio, my accelerator in San Mateo, I'm trying to find a nice garage or something to put it in, a big open space. I was thinking of starting a competitor to Kaufman Fellows. You know that program? It's $80,000 for 2 years.
Yeah.
So I want to create a Kaufman Fellows killer that would be half the price or maybe 1 year intense or 6 months intensive and maybe be 20K or something. Have 10 people come to each one and create a program where they basically get to draft off my deal flow. And the core of it would be they would sit in on all the investment team meetings and do all the frontline meetings. It's with
like
my associates.
Almost like a launch EIR program.
Like an EIR program, but like an associates in training, AI instead of EIR, AIR, associate in residence or, you know, AIT. So anyway, here's the business idea. The business idea is to establish a school that offers comprehensive training programs to individuals aspiring to be venture capitalists. So it took my prompt, by the way, was venture, where's
capitalist
my
training
prompt?
School.
Oh yeah. Venture capital training school. The school aims to provide participants with the necessary knowledge, skills, and practical experience required to excel in a highly competitive field of venture capital. So it added all that. It ad-libbed that, which is quite accurate. The venture capital industry has been witnessing significant growth in recent years. That's true. Fueled by increasing startup activity. True. And continued interest of investors in high potential early stage companies. However, there is a shortage of skilled venture capitalists. That's true. Who can effectively identify, evaluate, and investment. That's very true. By establishing a dedicated school for venture capital training, this business can tap into the demand for professional education in this field and potentially bridge the skills gap. This is true. SWOT analysis, strengths. Unique business idea with limited competition in the market. Tailored training programs can address specific gaps in the industry. Potential to establish strong industry partnerships for internships and job placements.
And Jacob, weaknesses. If I can pause you for a second here. you know, some of these things also, just the framework is good. Like if you're trying to do this, like, yes, you know, these, the SWOT may not be fully right, but it can get you thinking and get you going, yes, right, as well.
Yeah. I think that's the key point, is that you, as somebody who didn't go to business school, and just so people know, SWOT analysis, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. I had to go take a look at that because I didn't
really
remember. It's been so long. I don't go through that. Limited market size. Venture capital training is in each field. That's true. This is weaknesses. Demanding and resource-intensive curriculum requiring experienced instructors. I don't think it has to be resource-intensive, but okay. But maybe. And I don't know. Well, you do need to have somebody like myself who's been doing it for a while. Need to continuously adapt programs to incorporate changing industry trends. That's actually very true. Huh. Threats. Highly competitive. High competition for top talent from established venture capital firms. That's not true.
Yeah, why probably not? They're going to.
I don't think it's a threat to our business.
Okay.
Right, like if there's actually high competition for top talent from venture capital firms, that's what you
actually
want.
That's benefit. Fair. That's true.
Yeah, because then these people graduating would be rapidly evolving industry dynamics and regulatory changes. Nope.
Sure. The last that's one is made the up. Most.
Economic downturns affecting investor confidence and startup funding availability. That's it, nailed it. So it must have just said, what are the threats to a business that did this?
Yes.
Wow, this is incredible. And I've never even heard of a PESTEL analysis.
Yeah. Yeah, you didn't spend enough time in corporate America.
I did not. Political, economic, sociocultural, technological, environmental, and legal. When you were, what was the name of your consulting firm called?
Extreme Labs.
Extreme Labs. So when you did Extreme Labs, when you had customers, they would pay you massive amounts of money to write this kind of stuff up and include it in your analysis, or they did it themselves?
They were doing this themselves. Like, we were more of like on the development side, right?
Got so,
we
it.
Were,
so they would come but, to you know, with the stuff.
Yeah. But as our business expanded, we were doing more product management and product incubation. Then we would do these type of things.
Got it.
Yeah.
Oh my Lord. Suitable business strategy. It's just, yeah, this is incredible. What a great.
And Jacob, this is the free version. They have an advanced. I didn't get to try the advanced version, which they don't allow for free. You can do 10 of these for free. The advanced version is maybe something you should try for your business idea.
And it lets you make the report visibility public or private. I just put it on public so people could go see it. Well, books to guide you along the way. Venture deals. The Lean Startup. Angel. How to invest in startups. Timeless advice. Wow. I got to pick that one up. Who's the author? This book offers a first-hand perspective on how to identify, evaluate, and invest in promising technology startups, making it highly relevant to your business idea. Who's the author? Oh, Jason Galaganis. That's pretty funny. You can download it, export to a Google Doc. Wow, what a great service. So shout out to whoever made this.
Yeah.
Venturous AI, congratulations. And let me see the pricing here. Let's go on the pricing tab. Starter free, 10 standard reports a month, got it. Pro, $20 a month, 40 standard reports. This is great. I could see doing this with
startup.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I was going to say you could use it as, like, you could do this as part of, you know, the university and all the things you're doing. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what's interesting about this, it says you own the commercial report rights. That's interesting. What I like about this is I could do this if they had an API. Every time we meet with a company, we put it in our database. We have a summary of that business. So what I've been thinking
API
about
access right there. Look at
what's that.
What's that? Right in the screen.
Oh, it does.
Contact us for API access.
Perfect. Yeah. What I've been doing now is in preparation for the great AI overhaul of our industry is we have a programs team call every day where, you know, the people who run Founder University Launch Accelerator get together for a 30-minute stand-up. And then we have two investment team meetings for 2 hours each, twice a week, Tuesday and Thursday. Because we process 60 new companies. Well, we do 60 new meetings per week, intro meetings. And so I'm gathering all of those and I am recording the Zooms now, storing the Zooms, transcribing, because Zoom does transcripts automatically, putting the transcripts into Notion. And then I'm summarizing. I think we're using the Notion API or we're using ChatGPT-4. I'm not sure which one. Just summarize the call transcripts for our internal meetings. Summer is reaching its apex, and there is nothing worse than tossing and turning and sweating in the night because of all that summery heat. Don't I know it? But the Pod Cover by 8sleep will keep you cool all night, all the way down to 55 degrees Fahrenheit. This is going to help you wake up fully refreshed.
And it's so easy. The pod cover by 8Sleep fits on any bed, just like a fitted sheet. And it improves your sleep by automatically adjusting the temperature on each side of the bed based on your and your partner's individual needs. You just set your 8Sleep side of the bed to the cool temperature you like. And maybe, hey, maybe your partner wants it hotter. Okay. Viva la différence. It can cool down and warm up and adjust based on the phases of your sleep, as well as your environment. I love my 8Sleep. Got one up in Tahoe, got one in the Bay Area. You know, sometimes I'm in Tahoe, it's freezing. I need to get nice and toasty warm so I get a nice sleep and I get cozy wozy. Hey, but then sometimes in the summer in the Bay Area, we get this heat waves in August and September. Oh my Lord. But then I bring my 8Sleep way down, 55, 60 degrees. I love it freezing cold. Those crisp cold sheets are waiting for you. 8Sleep's cooling technology is a lifesaver in the summer. Take it from me. Go to 8sleep.com/twist for exclusive summer savings on the pod cover until July 10th. That's today. Today is the last day to get that July 4th deal. So go right now. 8sleep.com/twist. Hey, they're now shipping in the USA, Canada, the UK, and select countries in the EU, as well as Australia. Way to go, 8Sleep. What should I do with that data eventually?
Well, it's a good segue, J. Cal. I think, let me show you the smart moderator. Yeah, exactly.
Can have C-3PO moderate your podcast.
Oh. Yeah. So similar to, kind of what we are talking about here, what a team launched is a chat app specific to the Hacker News. And what they've done is they've taken all what's going on in Hacker News.
One size bigger.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, we can up that a bit.
Welcome to Chat HN. So this is chathn.vercel.app.
So Vercel. So Vercel is actually crushing the game. We should spend a little bit of time giving them a shout out. They are a modern hosting, like an app hosting service. And they've been doing this for a while, but in the AI game, they're the go-to. So if you want to host any type of AI app, most of the frameworks that people are using are designed for like sort of one-click deployment into Vercel, and they do a great job. They have very flexible plans, and so they're like sort of the modern up-and-comer in the cloud war. I mean, you know, they're more than up-and-comer now, but they've been really crushing it. And so, and they have a bunch of their own additional frameworks. Like in this case, they have an AI SDK to help you with, you know, sort of the chat and all those other things that they're doing a really good job of as well. So big shout out to the Vercel team here.
And so you get this prompt. Give me the top five stories on Hacker News in markdown table format. Seems like doing tables and formats is like a great use for AI. You click that and it gives you the title, link, score, and comment. Score is something they use on Hacker News to kind of give it, how popular something is. And it gives you the first it gives you the top five, and then it says, hey, send me a message. So I guess we could ask it, give us the five funniest comments on the first story. Let's see if that does anything.
So it not enough amusing comments to provide the complete five list. Yeah.
Oh, interesting. How about give us the most,
how about this?
Oh, what is the sentiment on Threads? Interesting. So this is a proprietary data set and, it just gives you a new interface for how to process all that information. And this is, the work of an analyst. So when I see this work, I don't know what you see. I see a $40 an hour person. And if you ever want to, when I talk about hourly wages, I always extrapolate as a business owner and somebody who invests in businesses as the hour of what an hour of work costs. And then you just times that by 2,000, right? Because it's 50 hours a week, 50 weeks a year, 40 hours a week, 2,000. You know, listen, if you work 50 hours a week, it's 2,500. If you work 60 hours a week, it's 3,000. But 2,000 is a pretty good multiplier. Yep. $40 an hour, 2,000 hours, $80,000 a year. That's a really good paying job, especially from home. And that's what an analyst would get. A researcher would get $20 an hour, and a data processing person, like an offshore kind of person, would get 5 to 10 in Manila. So 5 times 2,000 is $10,000. 20 times 2,000 hours is 40, and 40 times 2,000 is 80. Just so you get an idea, $80,000 is a U.S.
you know, smart person who reads books, you know, English as a native language, researcher, as somebody just out of school or maybe went to a 2-year and then offshore, they don't understand the context in America probably. And it's English as a second language in many cases. So whose job do you think this replaces most? And because we keep seeing this, and I say the researcher analyst and the data formatting person keeps coming up.
Yeah. So let me answer your question a little bit indirectly, which is, so first, I think given large proprietary data set, you can see the value of putting a chat interface on top of it, right? And so I think for you guys, what you need to do as the next step is you have all this proprietary data now, which some of it's even being created by AI or enhanced by AI. We need to stick a chat interface in front of it. So that should be sort of one of our projects so that you can go through that and ask a general question, say, hey, have there been any other companies that have come through that have pitched us on selling ice from icebergs? And then it can go through that data and then you can get that answer quickly and you can see, you know, what was the call about and things like, you can kind of dive into it. So I think that's the first thing we're trying to show there is that the world of deploying your own chat app on your own data is really simplistic now. And I think, you know, it's something that we should, you know, explore for launch. And so we should kind of kick that off. Yeah. I think the value is, you know, in one sense, in a replacement, but I think it's the enhancement. I think if you put this in front of everyone and ask yourself how many times, J-Cal, how much are you relying on your memory to go back? Oh, there was a company that did that. Or, you know, where did these guys end up?
Got it.
And now to basically have that enhancement is more valuable rather than a replacement of a person or an analyst, but to basically kind of give yourself that superpower. I think that's where it's a much better framework for value.
So let me explain this to folks, because I think you just hit a key insight. Okay. When you're running a business, an at-scale business like ours, 15,000 people emailing us and filling out our form and sending us a pitch for a company, you know, over 1,000 people coming to Founder University a year. We have so much data and we have 19 people in our little investment team, our little company. Now imagine with those 19 people, we then do an analysis. We do that analysis. And if we do that analysis of what we're doing, I would normally go to somebody on my team and say, hey, we met with that company. They were doing a marketplace of diamonds, but we had heard two other pitches about diamonds, the one who was doing the fake diamonds and another one who was doing, you know, setting your diamonds and was using AR. I can't remember any of that. Now, normally you just search for diamonds and then you get all this cruft, diamond in the rough. Somebody would be saying like, oh, this person's a diamond. Here you could say, tell me all the startups that are working in the diamond industry that we've met with over the last 5 years and pull clips from their video, because we have the video now, and make me a little dossier. Of that.
Yes.
Or show me all the marketplace companies we met with last year.
Yes.
Then go on the web and tell me how many employees they have on LinkedIn. And this is where LinkedIn has to start in paid API. I don't know. This is, you know, Twitter and Reddit having their APIs. I think the LinkedIn API for LinkedIn team, please let us just give you money, because everybody's scraping your data anyway, and we can buy your data from like Israeli or, you know, companies in the Philippines have scraped all of LinkedIn already. They have it all. And you can't stop the scrapers, and it's legal in other countries to scrape this stuff. So your terms of service means nothing in those other jurisdictions. So now you're left with going with gray hat people for data sources. And I'd like to put this on you for next week. If you could find some gray database sources of like Instagram, Facebook profiles, whatever, I'm curious about the gray market underground. So anybody has information, send it to producers at thisweekinstartups.com or Sunny, what's your Twitter?
At Sundeep.
That's what I think is going to be super interesting is some of this gray market data. But imagine if I could ping the actual API and it would come back and tell me, hey, this company has 60 employees. When you met with them, they had 20. And I would pay for that. I would pay some amount for database calls. It could be an incredible revenue stream for LinkedIn. And I get pinged by people who are like, would you like a billion LinkedIn reference, you know, database records of CTOs, of founders? Like, this stuff's all been scraped already, so don't be precious. But
yeah,
all of that back and forth in meetings and research, somebody's like, oh, I'll get back to you in an hour.
Yeah.
It's going to be like, I didn't even need to waste somebody's time.
So, Jake, I know you've been on this for a bit, and one new segment I wanted to start, and so we're not fully up and running with this yet, but we have the framework, and I think we're going to start building this out. We're going to start building this out over the next couple of episodes. And so you've been going on about auto GPTs. And so yes. What I have here is a basic framework of an auto GPT that I've created.
Define
I've
just given auto GPT like, for the audience who's catching up.
So yeah, an auto GPT is an agent that uses LLMs to work through a problem through what's called like a chain of thought. So you'll give it like a high level problem statement, and then it will come up with a set of tasks to solve that on its own. And then it will use its access to different sub agents it has to solve that task. And so, this is, you know, from a demo sense, and Jake, I'm going to add you actually to this Replit. So you can basically participate in the live experience that we're going to have. And so like, I'm going to just start with this isn't with LinkedIn, and you'll just see the power of what we can do here. So you can say, can you come up with a schedule of summer league? Let's call it NBA summer league games for me to watch. And so what this is going to do is, so I just gave it something generic, and it's going to say here really quickly, well, I need to start by searching for summer league games. Mm-hmm. And then it's going to figure out, okay, I found a place to get it. So I need to analyze those results. Mm-hmm. And then it found that it can get it from this NBA page. Right. Mm-hmm. And then it'll start working to put it into. Now, this is just, it's a basic framework. We're not like, it's not fully up and running yet.
What are we using
yet.
Here again? One more time. What is this called?
So this is basically something we've built from scratch, but it's using two main, we're running it in Replit. So we want to give them a shout out. It's shout using out Lang. Replit. Yep. And we're using LangChain, which is sort of like a
language model by Facebook.
No. It's not a like we're using OpenAI.
That's the other one, yeah.
Yeah, LangChain is a scaffolding framework for working with LLMs.
Yes.
Right? And we're using another server called SERP API, which is basically a search engine results API. So it basically interacts with Google. And so that's what the two keys you see
does
here.
Google we have an allow that, or it's just, how does it actually do that? It has your machine do the search and then rips the HTML page apart?
No. There are whole companies that exist for this now, right? And this is a company called SERP API.
Wow, I've never heard of this. I'm learning.
Yeah, here. And so they exist. You have paid use cases with them, and they. Basically, you give it a search and they'll return you back like the search engine results in a consumable format, which is like sort of on the right hand side, what I'm describing here, like as JSON.
SERPAPI.com, which is search engine result page.
Yes.
Wow.
You're very familiar with this, Jake Cal.
Yeah,
right?
Sure. Of course.
Yeah.
Yep.
And there's a few of these, but this is the one that I've decided to use in this particular demo here. And that's how this auto GPT, which, you know, I gave it like, can you come up with a list of summer league games? Obviously, this is not, it doesn't have the 2021 limitation. It uses a SERP API to figure out, well, that result's going to come from this NBA.com page, summer league schedule. And then it will start to kind of parse through that document to come up with your list. And so this is sort of the beginnings of our auto GPT, and we're going to start working through this. But so I wanted to kick this off today for us. So.
Great.
Yeah.
So how do you propose, what's the next step in this?
Well, the next step is like you've had a bunch of different use cases, right? You rattled one off today, but let's just build towards now that we have the basic scaffolding and you know, we're going to get you back to writing code again, J-Cal. We'll basically, yeah. So, and you can see this thing is not very long. It's only like 60 lines of code. That's the beauty here. And, you know,
because all of that is being abstracted by API calls. So,
exactly.
These days, and writing code is really like hitting 20 different APIs and blending whatever you get back, right? It's really fascinating how code has changed.
Yeah. And honestly, like in this particular case, like the code to use that SERP service is right here, right? This SERP API wrapper. And then this is my API key that I have with them. In the example you were talking about with LinkedIn, if LinkedIn would want to work with us, they would offer a key that we would pay for. Mm-hmm. We would import their agent, and then we'd have another agent here that wasn't search, but that was like LinkedIn that we would go and get that information from. But there's plenty of other services out there. LinkedIn isn't there yet, but that's how we're going to get back into it.
All right. So here's what I would like to do. I want to create one of these.
Okay.
I'm gonna run this up the flag. Well, that finds new startups that aren't in our database already.
Okay.
And then finds the founders, puts them into a category, does some sort of analysis of their business, right? Like finds out what the startup does, sends it to that other API from the people who do venture, what's it called?
Venturous AI.
Right. So we find a startup somewhere that didn't exist before. So an announcement of a new startup that could happen on Hacker News, Reddit, Twitter, LinkedIn, people could announce a new startup. So we find announcing my new startup, date being today. So it was published in the last 10 days, let's say. So in the last 10 days, somebody publishes, I'm announcing my new startup. And we could do that with the search engine result page by passing a query to it. So we could say Google, and you can do this in a chat window, or I could do it in one. We would say to Google, new startup announcement. And then you would go to
advanced search, filters, unlimited.
Advanced search. Yeah, no, where is it? So you go to tools, and then I would pick not anytime, but I would say in the past week, it would come up with a search result, which is Crunchbase, EU Startups, AliWatch. Yeah. And we would try to find on those sites new startups and find the URL of the startup. Once we have the URL of the startup, then we could find their LinkedIn profile page. We could find their Twitter profile and then try to get some information on that startup and then propose them to a researcher analyst inside our team and then click book meeting. That would be amazing. That would, because by the way, we do that. We call it qualified hunting. We try to have our researchers and analysts hunt for companies that never applied to our programs. And so that's hunting. And you know, Product Hunt, speaking of hunting, Product Hunt has like every day new products coming in there. So we just look at the URLs of every new product on Product Hunt, which is why I think Angel has bought it, is because they wanted to have first dibs on all the new startups and technology. So very cool. All right, listen, you're in the technology industry. You know what Carta is. Carta is the leading venture capital and equity management platform. What does that mean? It means they manage your cap table. They manage your venture fund. They are the experts at that. And they do such an amazing job. All of my startups use it. They all love it. But I've got huge news to share with you. Carta now lets you syndicate an SPV. So you can create your own syndicate through Carta. That's right. That's what I've done. I have a syndicate. When I have a great investment, like say Calm.com, I put a little bit of money in, $50,000 in Calm, and then $328,000 came in with the syndicate. You can then go build your own SPVs and use Carta as your partner. They are one of the most trusted names in business, you know that, and they're used by more than 4,500 funds that represent over $120 billion in assets under administration. And they will support you on every stage of the fundraising journey, from your first syndicate to building your global venture capital firm. You can raise and deploy from anywhere because Carta offers US and international SPVs, and they fund in different domiciles. That means different locations, right? Fancy word for locations, geos. Carta provides this automated back office solution so you can focus on what's important, building and finding great startups. Building these amazing relationships, investing in great startups. So it's a very simple call to action. I want you to go to Carta.com, C-A-R-T-A.com, you know that. But use the code TWIST to get 10% off your first SPV. That's Carta.com, and use the code TWIST.
Yeah, so I think that's our little project. So we'll take that and we'll kind of expand it out and we'll kind of work through it, and we'll show the results every episode.
You know, I'm very interested in Facebook's approach to AI. They have their own language model that was leaked, quote unquote.
Llama.
And it's very popular on Hugging Face and other places. So yep. Llama, they claim, was accidentally leaked by Facebook itself so that it would kind of undercut Google Bard and proprietary stuff like closed AI, ChatGPT-4. Who knows if that's true, but they keep putting out public stuff. So they're still on the public releasing of information open source tip, correct? Yeah. Or are they correct. Now circling the wagons and being closed?
They've been very open and public. You know, if there's things that they haven't released yet, they've just said they're going to release them. There's one that they did recently. We can pull it up as well. But I think, you know, this is probably a better segue into threats.
Mm.
And you know, I actually was having this thought over the weekend, which is, you know, is Threads perhaps a way to get the data set for a hive mind? Because if you look at any of their existing products, they've all evolved, right? You know, Instagram is, And, you know, Instagram is not going to give you sort of hive mind because it's going to give you video and pictures, right? WhatsApp, if you mine that data, it's going to give you proprietary chats. And Facebook has just evolved into something I don't really understand anymore. Maybe you can chime in there.
If you want birth announcements and bar mitzvahs and retirement parties, you know, kid photos, it's basically for moms and dads and grandma and grandpa.
I use it like a, I use it like our Yahoo groups. There's some great groups I'm in there. But
yes, you know, the groups product is very subtly, I think, put a lot of new life into that because the general feed is kind of like boring and repetitive. Oh, it's your birthday. Happy birthday. Literally, it's a birthday announcement website. Or a birth announcement website even. So why, let me ask you one question here. I know we'll get back to Threads. Facebook, I have my own theories, but I'm curious of yours. OpenAI went closed. Google published all this stuff, including Tensor, and kind of regrets it, I think, now. They're kind of closed.
Transformers
and everything. So they're closed. Or somewhat closed, and they're not doing, they're not announcing the papers anymore, is what I heard. The scientists are not announcing their work as often.
No, that's, you know, I would say that's not fully true. You know, they just launched a paper that we're leveraging like around SQL Palm just a, you know, a few weeks ago. So I think they're continuing to do that. You know, their approach from a cloud perspective, Google Cloud perspective, has been, hey, we're going to have our own proprietary models and we'll also host open models and models from other proprietary companies as well. So if you are a Google Cloud user, you can use their Palm models, which are their proprietary ones. They also support all the open models inside of their, you know, inside of their frameworks, right?
Got it.
And also, they have models from companies like Anthropic, right? And I feel like they have a really kind of a so a great.
Why do some people choose open and some people choose closed?
It's sort of the, you know, the natural arc of the tech industry, right? Like when operating systems first started, they were all closed, right? And then quickly we had an evolution to more open source Linux or and Unix based operating systems, right? You know, BSD and then Linux. And so I think people try to build, now there's always these conflicting forces. I'll speak from a developer standpoint, right? When something is closed and owned by a company, it can move very, very fast. Because when it's open source, you have to work your way through the community. Now, the way companies have got around this, let's talk about, say, Red Hat and Linux, is that they represented almost like 90% of all the folks that had the control on the project that were the developers. And so big companies can be, can embrace open source and not get stuck in sort of some of the politics that emerge inside as well. And then there's the reason that, you know, you think you have a lead and you want to basically create a moat for yourself. And so those are the main reasons that generally pop up.
The best way I heard it explained to me was when you're behind, you open source. When you're ahead, you're closed. And if you look at, say, Windows, they had a monopoly on the desktop, closed. They don't need to be open source. But then you look at Google, very far behind, they have a monopoly on search. So when they talk about search, their algorithm for search is closed. You can't understand how pages are ranked. But then you look at Android, they went open because they were so far behind iOS and stuff like that. So they went open source and they wanted to be on everybody's phone. So I think Facebook going is closed when it comes to their graphs and everything, right? Facebook, Instagram,
They all used, closed. They you used to be open when all the companies like were created, you know, like Zynga and all, and then they closed the graph up, you know, at some point.
When they had a lead. And nobody can compete with them, which is exactly what OpenAI did. They became closed AI. So fascinating. So on Threads, what are your, I logged in. I immediately got dunked on because they're like, oh, friend of Elon is on Threads. So I like literally did like two, I did like two posts to it, just like hello world. And then I was like, oh my God, Zuck's such a little copycat. And then Zuck winds up replying to me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And he put concerning.
What was his reply? He's like,
oh, I think he did concerning with a wink. You know how Elon will just give a one word reply?
Yeah.
Like interesting. So not only is Zuckerberg copying Twitter now, Which in fairness is copying Jack more than copying Elon, right?
Yeah.
But he's obviously still obsessed with Elon as well and Twitter. He's, I mean, Zuck's been obsessed with Twitter from the beginning. He was going to buy it and he's got a lot of comments, but he actually took on Elon's replying with one word replies, which I thought was hilarious. Super Elon thing to do.
Huge engagement with like people, right? Like,
well, no, now he's like, yeah, I'm going to engage to get my social. It's like, okay, yeah, we know that. Like, and then he's like, I'm going to be outrageous. I'm going to fight Elon in the octagon.
Yeah.
So Zuckerberg is clearly like obsessed with Elon and, you know, copying him. Just like he was with Snapchat for a while. And well, before that, I guess Instagram, which he bought, he was obsessed with that for a little while. But I think it's a perfectly serviceable copy of Twitter. They obviously rushed it because it's feature light. It doesn't have a lot of the features. But it's a different graph.
Yeah.
I found it was like a lot of people who don't have interesting things to say, trying to say things with words instead of pictures. Does that make sense?
You nailed it. Like, that's the issue, right? Is that, look, I think Instagram has a huge community. I think they have a ton of engagement, probably, you know, maybe orders of magnitude more than Twitter does, but it's for a different purpose.
Yes.
And it's kind of focused around video and photos.
Yeah.
Many a times those videos and photos are not a real representation of what's happening. It's sort of like, hey, look at me. They're staged, right?
Highly produced.
Yeah, highly produced. And so, and look, people want that. And I think it's great. And I think subsequently, the graph you create when you have an Instagram account is around that as well, right? You've decided to curate something there. And I think when you go to Twitter, whether you have, you know, your list of folks that you follow or like a For You feed, it's a completely different input into the system, right? Which is, you know, no one on Instagram is sharing archive papers, right? You know, from these research papers, right?
No.
But
debating the subtle points of the Ukraine war. Russia's invasion, China, Taiwan is not a big topic.
And you know, it's so funny, like what I kind of posted this thing, which was like, for like 24 hours, it felt like all the threads were disappearing on Twitter, like how to, you know, do the, you know, make money from AI or, you know, all, they were gone for about 24 hours and then they all came back because that, and again, vice versa, that community there doesn't want to read that stuff, right? Yeah. They don't want to read the, what's the latest in AI and let me see the last five cool AI tools that were launched and how can I make money using them?
This is the key thing that for founders who are listening, this is the key thing you have to understand about making a clone. If you make a clone of another product and that product is doing a good job and it's like, it's servicing its purpose and it was the first, it's the at scale one, I won't say the first, you have to be so much better. And it might be that the team that built that product has already gotten it to so much better that the users can't tell the difference. And so if you look at Threads versus Twitter, there's nothing there that's different or better. And in fact, obviously they're still playing catch up. Until they have something that's dramatically better for some reason, it's going to have a moderate success, right? It's and the same thing held true for search engines for a long time. People just kept making search engines until PageRank came out and the results were noticeably better, like different, 10 times better. There was no reason to go over to Google. Yahoo got you, or Lycos, or Excite.
Excite,
they all got you. Alta Vista, Magellan, these things all got you to a similar result. You would type in Pepsi or Coke and it would get you to the Pepsi or Coke website.
Yeah.
But when you typed in Pepsi versus Coke and it got you to some scholarly article about the Pepsi challenge, you're like, oh, wow, this is interesting.
Yeah.
It's better. Which is why ChatGPT feels so uniquely different. So there has to be something uniquely different for people to change. I've learned this the hard way many times building products.
Yeah. Now, look, the one edge where, you know, Instagram, Threads, you know, Meta will have is brands. Because a lot of, you know, when I look at accounts, like it's a mix of things you follow. And if you follow, you know, like kind of larger brands for a reason, then, you know, I think Instagram is starting to surface that a little bit better. And at least from my understanding from a few different folks I spoke to is they went and targeted folks. And I don't mean brands just by companies, but brands that are people as well. Because, you know, they had Mr. Beast on there and other folks. And so
did they pay for him to give away a Tesla? That was like a very specific troll.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the the economic arrangement was. I guess
Zuckerberg gave him $1 million or something to start posting over there, or paid for the giveaway.
Well, I definitely heard that from someone, you know, is reliable to say, like, they definitely had a pretty, it started actually when the whole thing happened with the subscriber ticks, the verified ticks.
The verified was the start. Yeah. They copied the verified checkbox.
No. So, saying when Twitter started to change the policy around, that's when they started going after the high profile folks.
Got it. Smart.
Yeah. Yeah.
Smart. Because
they saw that as like sort of a misstep.
Yeah. And, it's an attack vector.
Yeah. And so that's where they kind of went after these brands. Right. And so. Now the challenge is like, so Mr. Beast is the most interesting on YouTube of all places, and his Twitter and his, you know, Threads are sort of, okay, I don't know where to go. They're secondary. The struggle also is, and you know, people start saying this thing, well, you'll just post in both places, but if you're trying to maintain a conversation and you're trying to it's very hard to do that across both platforms now. And so I think that's going to be the challenge. And what'll end up emerging, and I think we had it in our show notes. I think Adam had a really good post saying, look, I just think I think we're just going to become two different things. I don't think they're trying to, here we go. Right. And so why don't you read this out, Jake Howes?
The goal isn't to replace Twitter. The goal is to create a public square for communities on Instagram that never really embrace Twitter, and for communities on Twitter and other platforms that are interested in a less angry place for conversations, but not all of Twitter. Politics and hard news are inevitably going to show up on Threads. They have on Instagram as well, to a certain extent, but we're not going to do anything to encourage those verticals. So he's basically telling journalists, we really don't want you on here talking about Ukraine, talking about AI threats.
Yeah.
Because that Debbie Downer news is not where advertisers want to be. So this is another, I guess, if you were going to list all the attack vectors for Twitter, even pre-Elon owning it, the fact is, it's highly intelligent people debating very controversial subjects, gender, woke politics, wars, geopolitics, technological edge cases, and dark stuff. Advertisers don't always want to be next to that. Some don't mind. They just want audience, but other ones might be very brand conscious, right? So that's another attack vector. But I'm surprised they didn't embrace journalists, because journalists tend to be on the woke side of things. There may not be fans of Elon, and they probably feel very bad about losing their blue. I know they felt very bad about the blue check mark thing. I mean, Kara Swisher talks about, and Professor Cole takes, they talk about Elon incessantly on Twitter.
Yeah.
And they have invested in Post News or something, like the competitor. And I'm like, why are you guys on Twitter if you're investors in Post? Go to Post News. Post.
Well, and also Meta's had this battle with news organizations.
Yes.
Like the big thing happened in Canada recently, in Australia, right?
Very good
as well.
Pull. Very good poll.
Yeah. Right. Where, you know, that they have this challenging relationship with news organizations now, which is, I think,
news organizations want to get paid, and Zuckerberg does not like to share revenue. So I have a prediction here. You know what I think?
Let's hear it.
Well, I think this is a fight that Zuckerberg does not want to lose. So I don't think, like, remember he came up with like Poke to attack Snapchat, and he did it like, initially. I think he did four or five competitors to Snapchat before just saying, you know what, screw it, put it in Instagram. I give up. I'm not going to make a standalone thing. I have a feeling that Threads will become a feature inside of Instagram, and they'll just be like Threads next to Photos, just like they've like a tab kind of a situation. Because I think as a second app, it doesn't work.
Yeah,
I would rather have a single app like Instagram. I don't want to give him like the roadmap here, but I think having a tab with Threads without images, so images are not allowed in it.
Yeah,
it's, you know, you can't attach an image. You can only do text. That would be a better place for it to live. And then you get 100. I don't have to rebuild the graph. Like, I literally did not check follow everybody, because I don't, I didn't want to do that and send a bunch of alerts out.
I accidentally did it, and it was like, it's been a mess.
Right? Well, yeah. So I was like, I'm not just going to follow everybody, or I'll restart my graph. And then I was like, I do not feel like playing the rebuild my social graph for the 50th time in my life. I don't know how many times, I don't know the last time I had, Clubhouse was the last time I started rebuilding. I was like, this is just not worth it. I think the audience is exhausted with that. But I do think I do like your angle of this is how to get a data set. Yeah. So if they did this and it didn't make any money for them, but they did get like more text and discussions that they could use.
And topics of today. Like what are people talking about that we can use for an LLM? Because remember, right? That's what this is all going to go to is having these LLMs to help people in decision-making and things like that. And I think this is a great way to get one of those data sets.
This is why Google should have not given up on doing social. They should have kept doing it. They did Google Buzz, which was an extraordinary social network before Google Plus, which was actually very well designed.
Yeah.
But when they did Google Buzz,
they had another one with a weird. They had another one with a weird Orchid. Name too.
Orchid yeah, was one they did in South America during 20% time when you could just release products with like your on your Fridays at Google. There was something called 20% time where Larry and Sergey let you work on whatever you want on Fridays. Pretty cool idea. But what Google Buzz did was, and maybe producer Nick, you can go find Google Buzz screenshots. And I wrote a blog post about this. Holy cow, Google Buzz is going to like kill Facebook. Now, of course, it's easy to dunk on me, but they gave up on it for privacy reasons, which they shouldn't have. What you see here, when you look at Google Buzz, and this is your inbox, right? Gmail. And then right under it was Buzz, and it told you how your updates. So you get in there and you get like a Twitter or a Facebook box. Hey, what are you doing? You type into it and then you see everybody else's. It was brilliant. It lived in your Gmail box. Google should go back to this because you can write an email or you can just give an update inside of your email and it's right there. It lived in a perfect spot. Google gave up too early. Sometimes it takes 5 or 6 swings to get something right. Google did 3 swings, Orchid, Buzz, Google Plus. If they had done the 4th and the 5th swing, I believe they would have built a coexister, maybe not one that beat it. And then do you have my blog post where I wrote about this? Google Buzz is brilliant, like groundbreaking, game-changing brilliant. This is when Business Insider used to ask to refer myself. This is 2010. Google Buzz 1.0 was better than Facebook after 6 or 7 years. True statement. Facebook's history is one filled with stealing other people's innovations. I wrote this in 2010, 13 years ago, and doing them better. Zuckerberg has stolen every idea Evan Williams and the Twitter team have released. How ironic that now Google has out Facebook. Facebook 3, Google has an excellent privacy record and Facebook is a disaster. Most folks do not trust Zuckerberg and Facebook because of their privacy record. Da, 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 da. It's pretty crazy. Google Buzz auto-generates your network. This is much better process than Facebook's. Google Buzz is way faster than the sluggish Facebook. This is a huge advantage. Google Buzz relies and updates into your Gmail as threads. This is brilliant and a huge advantage. Anyway, my assessment was perfect. They just gave up. They turned off Google Buzz because they got too many privacy complaints. And this is what happens to a big company. Oh, look at this. I wrote, you can sign up for Jason's excellent email here. That's hilarious. Anyway, there you have it, folks. So I think if Threads just keeps going and Zuckerberg is really
and
good.
So social, like no one knew, at least, you know, obviously back then, the end game now is for the world's best LLM, which will be sort of the underlying API for everything. And it, you know, circles back around to what Twitter's real value means in this ecosystem today versus everyone else, especially with all the work that's happened around, you know, scraping and turning off scraping and monetization from scraping. I think it's really, really fascinating.
All right. Any lightning round stuff you want to go through here? I know I had a couple of other items to docket, or we can leave them for next week.
The other story that I thought was really good was the Inflection AI.
Oh, yeah. Explain this.
If you want to get into that.
Like a huge number of GPUs, right?
Yeah.
I saw this go by.
Yeah. Yeah. So Inflection AI, it started by co-founder of DeepMind, Mustafa and Reid Hoffman. And, you know, they raised a massive amount of money, I think $1.3 billion on a significant valuation, maybe $4 billion. Couple of interesting things here, right? The list of investors like Microsoft, NVIDIA, Reid, Bill Gates, Eric Schmidt.
Wait a second. So wait, Bill Gates and Microsoft are mortal enemies with Eric Schmidt and Google. And Microsoft and Bill Gates are massive investor or Microsoft's massive investors in OpenAI. So they are obviously hedging their bets here. Why not invest in 2 language models? 2 better than 1. Is that what I'm seeing here?
Yeah, and this one's even more interesting because alongside of the language model bet, this one is a significant hardware spend, right? And I believe, you know, they kind of are planning to have something like 20,000 H100s available in a cluster, which
these are NVIDIA's AI computers.
Yeah,
cards, correct, whatever correct. You want to call them.
Exactly. Chips. They're AI, you know, system on a chip or something.
Yeah. Right?
More than that. And so, yeah.
So they're going to spend hundreds of millions of dollars building that cluster.
Correct.
And now is
maybe even close to a billion. I think if you do the numbers, like the majority of that 1.3 billion would be consumed by the creation of that cluster.
Wow. Because those cost how much now? 150,000 or something? 40,000?
I think retail is like, no, 20,000.
Oh, 20,000. Right? Okay, so 1,000 would be 20 million. 10,000 would be 200 million. 20,000 would be 400 million. So 400 million as just a floor number.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, you got to add on other things. That's just the NVIDIA
cost. And you have to rack them somewhere. So wait a second. Why isn't this part of Azure? Why don't they just... I wonder if they're buying them and putting them in Azure's cloud, or if they're buying them and building their own cloud and their own co-location facility.
Well, anytime Microsoft's part of a deal that involves, you know, some kind of cloud infrastructure, it's usually part of their, you know, trade is that, hey, you're going to use our infrastructure in some way, shape, or form, right? And they've been really good at that. So that could have been part of the deal. But we don't know.
I wonder if that would fall into round tripping, you know, with these deals. Could greatly enhance Microsoft's and NVIDIA's. These kind of deals could optically make NVIDIA stock and Microsoft stock look more valuable. And the value of the stock would go up because you just got a $400 million order. Remember they said they were going to...
Actually, in the notes here, it's 40K. So it's actually $740 million.
So so $800 million comes in, right? Or something like that.
Yeah.
In new orders. That's going to make NVIDIA stock go way up. So let's say NVIDIA gave them $500 million. Let's say of the $1.3 billion, NVIDIA gave them $400 million, a third of it.
Yeah.
They gave them $400 million, and then they bought $800 million worth of hardware. They're basically just shipping the $400 million back to them.
Yeah.
And they must have a 50% margin on those machines.
Yeah.
So essentially, NVIDIA stock goes massively up by billions of dollars because of that order.
Yep.
And they got their money back. And the startup is essentially, in a way, painting the tape or wash trading in some way NVIDIA stock. Now, this could be completely inadvertent, but that is the result that will happen here is this order will make more people buy NVIDIA stock and the money comes right back to NVIDIA. This is something the SEC is going to be all over.
Yeah. Well, NVIDIA is the real winner here and even Microsoft, right? Because maybe all of those end up in a Microsoft data center, right? So if they're a big part of this.
Microsoft put in $400 million.
Yeah.
And then... They host them and then they send the credits back and they give 200, 500 million back to Microsoft for the next coming years. That's a round trip too.
Yeah.
I don't know how people who are so sophisticated are doing something that sends up so many red flags. They must have some plan to
it's really
make this clean.
It's fascinating and that we're just talking about the hardware side of it, J.Cal, but like, you know, flipping back around. I don't know if you've had a chance to talk about it, but you know, Twitter did shut off access to basically almost every service, scrapers. Right? And it was even breaking iMessage and Signal and everything else. And so, in today's world, like, how do you stand something up? And I know you had a tweet. You asked, "Hey, what's the go-to service?" And I think I linked to something there. Right? There's there's a couple of things out there, but. It's also fascinating, where are these folks going to get data from? And then we had a follow-on saying, hey, look, if you've ever trained a model, and you have some type of restricted data in there, it is in the model forever until you retrain.
Mm.
And so this whole world is super interesting because if you have that much investment on hardware, where are you getting the associated data from that is not restricted at this point, such that you can leverage such a huge amount of hardware that you need.
Do you think the next set of models will be weaker than the previous set because of this?
I think if you're creating a model from scratch, the answer is yes, because when the models were previously created, so I think, I say this with about like 90% certainty, Twitter changed their policies post Elon's takeover. And so if you were trained off any data from before then, and your models are using that for, their training data, and they can use it for their own reasoning, I think it's fine. But I think if you have any data beyond that point, you can't. And I think it's going to create a real problem for folks that are starting from scratch today. That's what I want to be
specific. Let me ask you a technical question. Yeah. If you did train on Reddit, Twitter, or Quora's data set,
in the past, previously.
In the past. Yes. And we know they have, yes, because people have proven it, right?
Yes.
Because you can ask the LLM and it will pull information from it, right?
Correct.
So there's no doubt that they did that.
Correct.
I'm not going to pick any particular company. So if you did train on that, does that mean you have that information stored in some giant database? In other words, you took every single Quora question and you're storing them somewhere, or you have the resulting hashes of those. So it's masked. Therefore, if you were to say, give me, I want you to go into your LLM, like I have a cause of action, like a legal action, yeah, against somebody who made an LLM, let's say an open source one, even, you know, and let's say the Facebook one, which is called
Llama.
Let's say Llama had crawled Reddit.
Yeah.
And we know that. Could they rip out what it learned from Llama?
No.
And what data is still stored in the language model?
So you know, it's probably worth a longer discussion with some demo, and we'll queue it up for the next one, and I'll put a demo together. When data is used to train a model, the data is basically turned into an embedding, and that embedding looks like a number between -1 and 1. And so I don't know if you remember from the summit, I kind of gave an example. So it's never stored as its kind of holistic nature of whatever you took. It's basically broken down by the model, tokenized, and then turned into a probability, which is then tied into, you know, what probabilities does this mean to the previous word, the next word. And so it's not kind of stored as a holistic thing where they...
Can that be untangled? Could it be reverse engineered to prove that these words it's giving in an example came from this place?
You will be able to do that, right? Because in those cases, you can ask it a question, and you'll just use an example. Like, you can go to OpenAI and you can ask it a question about, you know, what does it know about Elon's tweets? And it'll say, well, I don't know anything after September 2021, but before that, I know the following. And I think the tweet thread that you retweeted that Elon commented on, I had a little share, you know, like the OpenAI share in there that showed it's kind of data. I don't know if Nick, you want to pull that one up, but that one showed the history of the what it understood of the training data from tweets that it had prior to September 2021.
Yeah. So this is kind of interesting because I think they know this. And now when you ask it to give you tweets, it says, as an AI language model, I don't have real-time access to specific individual social media accounts or tweet history or their tweet history. Therefore, I don't have information on Jason Calacanis' top tweet topics from 2019 to 21. So they are preparing at OpenAI, I think, for eventually having to rip out all the tweets. So the balkanization has happened. It's so funny. The guys on All In were like, this will never happen. And I was like, I think this is guaranteed to happen.
They don't have to rip out all the tweets, right? Because it'll depend on when the terms changed.
You know, they could argue, even if the terms of service didn't say that they've created a derivative product and they want them to remove it.
Yeah, but prior to Elon's takeover, what if they were paying for...
Oh, that's different. Yeah. Who knows what that contract said? Yeah.
Exactly. We don't know.
Even if there was a contract. The contract might not have taken into account AI. So they can then. But it is interesting. Like, you can't get tweet data anymore. I don't know if you ever could, but I'm using GPT 3.5.
So here's my, from the tweet that we had together, which is, this one. And so this is what I said. I said, hey,
summary of the last 5 tweets, email, Elon's speech you have access to.
Okay. And it says, I don't. And then I said, what is the general theme of Elon's tweets in your training data? And then it says, as of the cutoff, SpaceX, Tesla, AI, cryptocurrency, humor and pop culture, personal benefits and opinions.
I wonder if it got that from like Business Insider, Wall Street Journal topics about his Twitter or
Twitter data itself.
So being able to rip it out, possible, not possible. Do you think they built in a kill switch to be able to remove stuff knowing that this would happen? I mean, Sam Altman and Greg are smart. They had to anticipate people would not be happy about this, and they did it anyway. They broke the rules to make the model.
As far as, you know, my understanding and experience, you have to retrain from scratch. You cannot take things out.
Now, are they going to retrain from scratch anyway? Is that the best practice when they make GPT-5? Are they starting from scratch, or are they taking GPT-4's learnings and then building on top of it? What's the better thing to do?
So this is an interesting topic, maybe worth spending a minute or two on. One of the things that Sam has been saying, and others have been saying something similar, including, you know, Brad, and he talks to a lot of people. Sam has been pretty open about they're not training another model right now. And where the majority of their energy is focused on is taking the models they already have and enhancing them so that they can have more memory and become personalized. Mm. And so, you know, today, whenever you go to OpenAI, it's sort of, you start from scratch. You have a history of everything you've done, but there's no collective learning from all of what you've said to say, okay, I kind of know the theme of what Jason wants, and maybe he wants me to always answer things like a pirate, because every time he comes in, says reply like a pirate, right?
And so he always wants things in table format with short sentences.
Exactly. And so one of the things that he's been very explicit about, they're not training a GPT-5 yet, but they're spending their energy around these kind of ancillary things to make the model much more personal and have memory related.
Yeah. If they have customers now, see, this is the burden of customers.
Yeah.
Because they have customers, the customers are pointing out all the weaknesses. So now they start getting into the edge cases, or how do I make this more polished? Once you have a car on the road, you know, when the Tesla Model S comes out, now all you've got is feedback about the Model S. This should change, this should change. And you start going down the punch list of to-do items, as opposed to making the Model 3 or the Model Y and having a fresh start with a new platform. So this is going to be their challenge.
I think it's partly that, which is they've got customers and they're stuck on it. I also think it's partly maybe it's good enough and it's become such a great reasoning engine, like our little experiment we're going to work on, J.Cal, where it already knows sort of how to take on tasks and figure things out. It just needs a set of sub-agents to do what it needs. And we don't need to make the larger model any better because we don't want it to be an information retrieval system. We'll have agents use SERP API and other things we've talked about. And it's good enough. Like, they may have just realized that at this point.
Yeah. Okay. This has been another episode of This Week in Startups, our AI edition. Sandeep Madra, Sunny, you're so great. Please don't sell your company. Make it into a unicorn. Let's get to $1 billion on this one, please.
Okay.
Sure, I don't know what I invested at. I probably invested at a $30, $40 million valuation. I need to get a 20x out of this.
Anything.
Please. I mean, I just want to turn that 250 I put in into 25 million. Is that too much to ask? You're never an LP in the funds. I mean, just get me 100x on this. God, 100x is just so great. I know you're working with some companies. You can't say the majority of the names, but if there is a corporate enterprise company out there or a category of company that you can do, Definitive Intelligence can do great work for right now, and I know you have a short, you don't have an unlimited list of open slots on the dance card, as it were. But if there were one or two dream customers for you, which would be the dream customers?
Yeah, I think folks that have made giant investments into data infrastructure. So, you know, folks that have put a lot of money into creating data lakes or warehouses, and they want to extract more value from that. And they want to do it in a way that leverages AI, not just from humans, but AIs automatically. So imagine there's, you know, agents that can look at your data, whether, you know, all day, all night, and kind of find the insights you're looking for. I think those are the ideal set of customers for us.
So I could see an e-commerce company with a lot of data, a finance or a fintech company with a lot of data, your Robinhood, you got a huge amount of trading volume.
Yep.
Can you just sit there and ask questions to the Robinhood data set? Would be incredible, right? Tell me about trades. Tell me about, you know, what was popular, what were the most popular stocks last year compared to this year? You know, which ones have fallen the most, which ones get the most amount of chat, or people with a lot of data like Reddit. So if someone like Reddit needed AI help, they could hire your firm to make interfaces. Or even Twitter needed people help with data, they could hire your firm. Got it.
That's kind of the ideal type of customer. Right. Yeah. And look, like, you know, that's what we're working on. We're very excited.
So you're Sunny at definitive.ai or IO?
Definitive.io.
Definitive.io. All right, everybody. We'll see you next time on This Week in Startups. Bye-bye. Thanks, partners and sponsors.